begin, I'm going to ask counsel to please remember to sign in, to use the sign-up sheets, either before your argument or afterwards, okay? So please do that. First case I have is the Thorstead matter. Mr. Smith and Mr. Sandoval, you're all set. Mr. Smith, would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
I would like to. 5 minutes, if I could.
5 minutes, certainly. And come on up, and we're happy to hear from you.
Ready?
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Kevin Smith. I'm representing Mr. Thorstead in this case. Basically, this is a speedy trial violation issue. The two primary focus that I see in this case are, number one, whether a failure to object formally as to the setting of the trial voided the speedy trial and constituted an acquiescence to go on beyond the speedy trial date. The other one, which I think is a far more interesting issue, is who has superior authority in order to determine whether or not a matter should be continued. In the case at hand, the Commonwealth argues that the matter is dispositive on the issue of setting the trial date because there was no formal objection made at that time. And they state...
Counsel, let me ask you, with regard to that, you cite the statute that talks about speedy trial and a number of cases,
yes,
which would indicate that there was a that there's no requirement for a defendant to make a formal objection. However, wasn't that statute amended in 1995, which then caused the defendant to have the obligation to make a formal objection?
I was going to address that issue.
Good.
This would be a good time.
The statute specifically states under 19.2.243.4 that continuous, the exception is when there is a continuance requested by the defendant or a continuance that is basically agreed to by the defendant with the Commonwealth, or on a motion by, and here's the most important aspect, the attorney for the Commonwealth of such motion to continue, and the defendant fails to object. We did not have a motion by the Commonwealth to continue this case. This was a case where I was appointed on the September 29th, and we came in for first appearance on October 2nd. At which point in time, two things happened. Number one, I signed off on an order to dispel with the motion that the defendant had and had actually tried to do that previously. And number two, set the matter for trial. There were no continuances requested. My request to the court was to set the court the case as soon as possible. Now, my position...
It was set within the speedy trial date, though, wasn't it?
Pardon?
It was originally set within the speedy trial.
It was originally set within the speedy trial.
So the question becomes, what happened after that?
Exactly. Exactly. And my contention is that the delay from October 2nd to January 22nd should not be attributable to the defendant, because the objection to the setting of a trial date and even the case law that I have is still applicable. Because it does not, the statute goes to continuances requested by the attorney for the Commonwealth.
On April 3rd, that was when the first trial date was set, if I'm looking at the timeline.
Correct.
Right here. And a motion to suppress was filed.
Correct.
And the Commonwealth asked for a jury trial. And your client, at that point, waived his speedy trial rights, correct?
Yes. Well, I concede April 3rd.
So as of that date, at least, we don't have a speedy trial problem.
Correct. Beginning April 3rd.
And then he moved for a continuance from that, from the next date that was set, because he requested forensic testing, correct?
Correct.
So that's not attributable to the Commonwealth.
That's correct.
And he moved for another continuance. Let's see. Because there was a change of counsel, correct?
Trial
counsel? He wanted to have a different trial counsel appointed?
No, what happened was his counsel that he had retained had been hired to be a magistrate in Louisa and withdrew his counsel.
But he needed a new lawyer.
He needed a new lawyer.
Well, that's certainly not attributable to the Commonwealth.
It's not attributable to the Commonwealth, nor is it attributable to the defendant, because
well,
it isn't.
As long as it's not attributable to the Commonwealth, we don't have a speedy trial problem, correct?
Then it would be attributable to the Commonwealth, because it is not the fault of the defendant that his counsel had gotten hired.
You can't have it both ways, counsel. I'm trying to understand. Why would it be attributable? I mean, it's his attorney who is, for whatever reason, could be illness, in this case, a judicial appointment of some sort. But the point is, he needs a lawyer, and he needs a continuance in order to have one.
And the question would be, is it the fault of the defendant in causing that
delay?
Well,
let's assume that it is, or at least it's attributable.
I will assume it is, and I will concede that period.
Well, then if my math is correct, we've got a total of 133 days that are attributable to the Commonwealth, and the speedy trial deadline, given that he was on bond for some period of time, if my math is correct, was around 273 days.
Correct.
Well, then I don't see where the speedy trial problem is.
That's where we get to August 21st, and whether or not the continuance was told at that point in time.
So in other words, if the your position is, basically, your argument fails unless we agree with your legal argument that the initial trial date, the setting of the initial trial date at the acquiescence, although not objected to, at the acquiescence of your client is attributable to the Commonwealth. Is that a fair statement?
From the October date when I first came on to the January 22nd, yes, that would be critical.
Okay.
And that's my argument, is that that should not be counted.
And the reason for that continuance was?
That was simply to finally set a trial date.
Set a trial date.
Which the defendant had been requesting since August 21st.
Counsel, let's get to August.
Go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Let's get to August 21st then. You're indicating that that's the period of time forward which the speedy trial statute would apply.
Yes.
What about the fact that while the defendant or the appellant says, I don't want this forensic testing, his attorney says, look, I think this is necessary and crucial to the defense.
And
isn't that something that should be attributable to the appellant at that time? And he's asking, or his attorney is asking?
And that's the big issue I have, because there is nothing out there that says that appellant's counsel has superior authority to the client himself. The client is the principal in the attorney-agent relationship, and therefore should have superior authority. In that case, on the 21st, you had not only his counsel specifically telling the court that his client did not want the testing done, and further, you have during that hearing a request that Mr. Thorstedt represent himself to the court. And the court actually said, I'll allow you to talk to the court, but I'm going to insist that your counsel at least sit at the table.
But the court did not relieve that attorney.
He didn't relieve the attorney.
So that attorney is still acting as his counsel when he is, in fact, asking for the testing to be completed.
And the counsel is requesting for the testing to be completed, and the client is saying, I don't want the testing to be completed. And the court overrides client's requests and grants the attorney's request. Now, ironically, what they were seeking was fingerprint testing, where they didn't have any fingerprints of the defendants in the first place. So it was kind of a useless test to test the subject matter to see if the defendant's fingerprints were on the items. He already has the defense. They don't have my fingerprints on it. Furthermore, after the defendant had made his objection to that test and wanted it withdrawn, the Commonwealth subsequently filed a motion to suppress the request for impossibility of performing the test.
But where is it that you're indicating about the superseding of the appellant's ability to withdraw versus counsel in consideration of the speedy trial? Because the speedy trial statute talks about that if the request is made on behalf of the appellant, by the attorney for the appellant that that counts against the appellant. Where's your authority to indicate that that would not be the case?
That is just the point. There is no authority out there. We have a situation where you have the client specifically telling the court, I do not want this done. I want to set a trial. I want to assert my speedy trial. You have counsel saying, ignore him. I want this done. We do not have any definitive.
Well, we do have some jurisprudence that delineates that essentially the tactical decisions are the province of the attorney and don't require client permission, whereas overall strategic decisions might.
That is
the question, I guess, would be, which is this? It seems to me whether you need forensic testing, for example, whether there's some advantage in delay, and I think we can all appreciate, those of us who've been trial lawyers can all appreciate that while you have a right to a speedy trial, it's usually the last thing a lot of defendants actually want to exercise, because witnesses can forget, they can move away, they can
die,
whatever, things can happen. So given all of that, why isn't the choice of a trial date inherently a tactical decision by counsel?
In this case, the trial date, I think I only have 4 minutes
remaining. I'm going to let you answer Judge Humphrey's question that he asked just at the beginning of your rebuttal. So go ahead and answer that question. We'll put another minute back on for you for rebuttal.
Okay. Could I ask that the question be rephrased again?
Well, basically it comes down to, why isn't the choice of a trial date a tactical decision by counsel that would bind the client?
In this case, I came in and I simply asked the court for a set of trials as fast as possible. The only other date that was available was a jury trial that I had, where I had another speedy trial issue, and I could not put those together. So they said, are you available on the 22nd? I said, yes, I'm available.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. I said, we'll give you a minute back.
Thank you.
Rebuttal. And
Mr. Chan, Your Honor, may it please the court, Chris Chanville for the Commonwealth. This case is really controlled by the amendment to the Speedy Trial Statute in 1995 and by subsequent cases decided by the Supreme Court of Virginia, some of which this court has mentioned already today. I've made two alternative arguments on brief. Since defense counsel is only arguing that there were 9 days over the speedy trial window, if the court holds that either of those two delays were attributable to him or not attributable to the Commonwealth, then this case should be affirmed. I do think that the Supreme Court of Virginia's decision in Heath versus Commonwealth, a case that was decided in 2004, is controlling of both of the issues, both of the delays raised on this appeal. The first delay between October 2nd, 2014 and January 22nd, 2015, when defense counsel failed to object setting the trial date beyond the speedy trial window. Today, for the first time, counsel has argued that because the statute only says when defense counsel acquiesces or fails to object to a continuance, that in cases like this where there's a date set for trial, that is somehow different. However, the Supreme Court of Virginia has multiple times ruled that they are the same thing. In Heath in 2004 and also in Hutchins in 2000, and I wanted to read at least one of those. They say essentially the same thing. But for example, in Heath versus Commonwealth, the Supreme Court said, the defendant's failure to object to the court's action in fixing a trial date is an acquiescence in the fixing of a trial date beyond the 5-month speedy trial period and constitutes a continuance of the trial date under Code Section 19.2.243.4. So the argument that somehow because it's setting a trial date is different than a continuance that's being made here today has been affirmatively rejected by the Supreme Court of Virginia on a couple of occasions. First failure to object to the setting of the trial date outside the speedy trial window is enough, and that's dispositive of this appeal. Secondly, what counsel contends is a more interesting question. There's also controlling case law. So that question, Heath also addresses that question. In that case, there was a motion for competency evaluation, and the Supreme Court of Virginia held that the delay resulting from defense counsel's motion was attributable to the defense, and as a result affirmed in that case as well. I think and the same result should apply here. Unless there are any questions from the court for the Commonwealth, I'm happy to rest on my brief and ask the court to affirm.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And Mr. Smith, you've got 5 minutes. Come on back up, sir.
All right.
How do you suggest we get around Heath? Doesn't that essentially apply to your argument?
No.
Why not?
No. Because my claim is that as of August 21st, the defendant asked for his trial to be set, and he was denied his trial being set. At that point in time, any further delays were not attributable to him and should be going against the Commonwealth. As far as the cases that have been cited, because the statute is worded the way it is, this is a statute that is specifically designed for the benefit of the prisoner and the defendant, which means any reasonable interpretation should be in favor of the defendant. Because the language specifically states in four those three criteria, it does not say a court's actions of setting the date to fit their calendar.
No, I think Heath simply says, the Commonwealth's position is Heath stands for the proposition that acquiescence, in other words, failure to object, it equals acquiescence, equals tolling and speedy trial, essentially.
And I would agree with that to the extent that all those cases that state that, there is an implied indication that there is a knowing acceptance beyond a speedy trial date.
I don't understand the knowing component that you're arguing.
Well, otherwise, what you're saying is that from the date...
How many days are in September or something? What is it you're not knowing, I guess? The effect?
No, when the speedy trial date was. And until we actually got the transcripts and heard after the trial, I really didn't know exactly what took place on the 21st. And I was under the same assumption, because I had talked with the Commonwealth as to where the case stood, and everybody was under the impression that this case had been continued by the defendant. I had no idea there was a potential speedy trial issue in setting it on the 22nd, because no one mentioned anything about this is the speedy trial date. And even in the court's ruling on the speedy trial issue, the court itself did not believe there was a speedy trial issue. So if I do not know that the date would run, I can't acquiesce and agree to it by silence.
Okay, you managed to confuse me. The speedy trial statute clearly says the clock starts running when probable cause has been found.
Yes.
And you've been, in the case of an indictment, you've been arrested on that indictment.
Yes.
Okay? So that's when the clock starts running. It's in the statute. I mean, it's not hard to figure that out. You, depending on if you're in custody the entire time or on bond at some point, you have either 5 months or 9 months. The Commonwealth has either 5 months or 9 months to hold your trial.
Correct.
And if they don't, they're forever barred from doing so. It's pretty straightforward. Where we get bogged down always seems to be with the math here.
Correct.
The statute says certain things control the running of that time. But if you have, say, 273 days because someone's been on bond, you start that count from the day they're arrested on the indictment, as is the case here.
Correct.
The trial date was set within that time. In fact, they didn't use up
the original trial date was, yes.
So we don't have a speedy trial problem when the original trial date is set.
Correct.
From that point on, the case is continued from date to date. And
Correct. It's
done either over the defendant's objection or at the defendant's request.
Correct.
Or with the defendant's acquiescence. Those are the only three possibilities, it seems to me. In two of those possibilities, the running of the speedy trial statute is tolled. In the third instance where the defendant objects, if there's any time left, that counts against the Commonwealth, And if they don't, if they use up all whatever time is left, they're out of luck.
Correct.
Would you agree with me? Okay. Here, it seems to me, I'm understanding, maybe I'm understanding or misunderstanding you, but I understand you'd be arguing that because a trial date was picked in there somewhere in the middle of all this, and you were not aware of the fact that failure to object would somehow impact that, or have a tolling effect on the speedy trial deadline, that should somehow count against the Commonwealth. Do I understand that argument correctly?
That would be correct, Your Honor. My argument is that from the
ignorance of the law or misunderstanding of the law by a defendant's counsel equates to a problem for the Commonwealth. Is that the gist of the?
That is not true, Your Honor. The pre-1995 cases that I cited are still applicable. The question is, are the cases that were decided by the court and ruled on in the acquiescence afterwards, is there a true conflict between those and the cases that I had cited? And does the statute actually state, and does the following Supreme Court case law say, oh, they're bound by the statute? And my argument is no, they're not. Otherwise, when you come in after on term day, there's the indictment, and the court says, okay, we're going to set the trial date, and the trial date is set. If you don't say anything, then you're saying, okay, that entire time, even though it's within the speedy trial date, is attributable to the defendant because they didn't object. So therefore, the defendant would have to object any time a trial date is set, and that doesn't make any sense. That's not what it's set up to do. My argument is that this time frame went from up to April 3rd, from April 3rd to August 21st, it was told, from August 21st on, should be counted against the Commonwealth. Thank you.
Okay. We'll come down and greet counsel.